Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we are going to be learning together Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of Sefer Zechariah. This is a very understudied Perek, and it really ought to be studied a whole lot more because it is a remarkably unique Perek in so many ways. When we learn through Nevi'im, we see so many prophecies which talk about the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. We see Yirmiyahu talking about it. We see veiled references in Yeshayahu. We certainly see when we read the Nevi'im Achronim, we see ideas of there being an imminent destruction. However, we have very few prophecies talking about the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. And that is what this Perek is about. Remember that as Nevuah is seceding, the last Nevi'im are in fact Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And they only appear at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. So embedded into them is not only the hope of the rebuilding, but also the danger, the darkness, perhaps, at the end of that era. And that's what we're hearing now. It's ironic because Zechariah is the one who's just for the last few prakim has been emphasizing how much hope, how much opportunity there is in the second Beis HaMikdash. And in this parak, it seems to be that he's focusing completely on the pessimism, on the fact that it stands to be destroyed if history is to play itself out, and it does. Many of the Mepharshim debate what specific details relate to discrete events in history, and there is so much debate that it's not possible at all to follow through on all Mepharshim. What we're going to do when looking at this is we're going to just focus on the Pirush or the Metzudas David and his basic understanding and his basic identifying of historic events, and there really is much more to do. So when one takes this Perek by oneself, one really needs to go through the Malbim fully, Abarbanel fully, to get a sense of all the different details. We're going to take a very simple track just to get a one sense of the flow of this. We're going to look at this Perek in three basic sections, the first three Pesukim by themselves, the major chunk in the middle, and the last three Pesukim by themselves. It is only a Perek of 17 Pesukim, but the content is very intense, the content is very thick and metaphoric as well. Let's look at the beginning. The first one is a prophecy about the cedars of Lebanon, where Zechariah describes the following. He says, Pesach Lebanon delosecho, Lebanon, open up your doors, v'sochal eish ba'arozecho, and let the fire consume your cedars. So he's talking about a sort of a picture of a forest opening up its doors, so the cedars, the great woods, should be burnt down. And he talks about how the rest of the weak woods, the smaller trees, will now cry out in fear as they see the large trees crashing down in burning. And not only will the smaller trees cry, but kol yelilas haro'im, even the shepherds will start crying out because their shudada adartam, that their protection, their shade has been destroyed as this forest was destroyed. What's going on here? What do we seem to be talking about? Many of the Mepharshim suggest, the Radak and the Suras, the classic Mepharshim suggest, that this is referring to not Lebanon as the country, but rather the building which was made out of the cedars of Lebanon, which of course is the Beis HaMikdash. This is referring to the ultimate destruction of the Bayis Sheni, which Zechariah is telling is a possibility if you follow a certain track. And therefore, that's what he's saying, is that all the other small woods, these are our leaders, other people around the country, when it is destroyed, they will wail. And who are the shepherds? Says the Malbim, it's the Sanhedrin. Says Rashi, it's the kings. It means so the Jewish leadership is going to mourn as the Beis HaMikdash is consumed in fire because it is the epicenter of their world. We now move into the second section of the Perek, and this is a really fascinating mashal. It is a very fascinating description of Hashem's interaction with the nation of Israel. And here's what he says. Hashem basically tells them, he tells shepherds, to take the weak sheep who are destined for slaughter and lead them. And he points out that when you have a flock of sheep, which is no good, is not going to produce anything, is not going to breed well, is not going to be very healthy, you don't give them opportunities, you don't give them the best of food, you're not going to really look after them so much. And in fact, when you sell them off, you're happy because you know that you really didn't have a good deal. It wasn't worth cultivating them. It wasn't worth investing energy into them. He says that is what that he says. He says, you are the weakest of all the sheep. What am I going to do? I'm going to take shnei maklois. I'm going to take, says Hashem, two staffs, two shepherding staffs, and I'm going to give them names. One is going to be called Noam, pleasantness. The other one is going to be called Chovlim, which means to say, suffering. And I'm going to look after my sheep with these two staffs. But I will lose three of my shepherds in Yerech Echad, in 1 month. And then my soul will become very, says Hashem, I'll be Vatik Tzar Nafshi Bohem. I'm going to get very upset with that. And I will no longer look after the nation. I'm not going to feed the needy ones or take care of the hurt ones. I'm going to allow them into the anarchy. And I'm going to take the one staff, which was called Noam, the beauty, the one of pleasantness, and I'm going to cut it down to remove my covenant with this people. And what I'm going to say to them is, if you want me to shepherd your people anymore, you're going to have to pay me. And my going rate is 30 silver. Therefore, says Hashem to Zechariah, I want you to take the 30 silver and throw them into my storehouse. And then I'm going to cut down my second of the two staffs, which is the staff of Chovlim, to annul my complete covenant of security and unity of Israel. What a strange description. So again, it sounds like this is recap here, just to get the details right and then try to understand what's going on over here. We have this weak flock of sheep. It is destined for slaughter, and so therefore very little investment is put into how it is treated. Hashem describes how he has these two staffs to shepherd his people. One is Noam and one is Chavolem. And then Chovlem, and then he gives over the people to three shepherds who disappear within 1 month. And then Hashem destroys first one of them, then asks for payment of 30 silver to shepherd the people from the owners of the flocks. And finally, after that, then destroys the second of the staffs to completely annul the covenant. What is going on over here? What do all these details mean? You can just see this. This is so ripe to understand. There's so much going on over here. So we're just going to follow one particular narrative, one way of looking at this. Mitzuras understands that this is the devolution of Bayis Sheni. This is going to be the sad story of what could have been a good time and what ended up as being a bad time. We're referring to really essentially the arrival of the first Jewish sovereignty in the second Beis Hamikdash, which is under the realm of the Chashmonaim. The two sticks represent the two different times of Hashem's leadership. Noam means pleasantness, so there's going to be a good time when the first Chashmonaim, Yochanan, Kohen Gadol, then Matisyahu, Kohen Gadol, his sons, Yehuda, Yonatan, Shimon, are going to take over. There's going to be a good time. That's going to be when Hashem will lead the people with Noam, with pleasantness. But afterwards, after they die, and there's going to be terrible anarchy within the Chashmonaim household, then Hashem will use his second stick, his second shepherding staff, which is the staff called Chovlim, which is suffering. Who are these three shepherds that are taken away in 1 month? These refer to the three sons of Matisyahu. Their names are Yochanan. Their names are Yehuda, who ruled for 6 years, Yonatan, who ruled for 6 years, and Shimon, who ruled for 18 years, making up a total of 30 years. And the Mitzvah points out that those 30 years represent sort of the Yerach, that month, a Yerach Yamim, which is a month of days, but days really referring to years here. Those are the good kings of the Maccabees of the Chashmonaim. When they lived at the beginning, they were the well-intended. And by the way, if you read Josephus, you read the history over here, it wasn't so simple. They were fighting battles all the time. Yonatan himself was betrayed by the Greeks, and he sacrificed his own two sons in order to free his brother. A very terrible, sad ending. But nonetheless, Shimon manages to actually finally get sovereignty from the Greeks in a more longer term level. So these are the three well-intended, good Chashmonaim. And afterwards, it sounds like after they disappear, Hashem says, I'm going to break Noam. I'm going to take away that good leadership of my way of interacting with Israel. And it's only going to be Chovlim, which is suffering now. Then Hashem says he demands payment. What's this payment? What's the whole business about payment? So the Mephoroshim debate, you know, maybe this is the going rate of a shepherd at the time. So what Hashem is basically saying is you've got to pay for the service over here. But on a more deep Kabbalistic level, we know that the idea of kesef, of silver, actually comes from the word lichsof. Lichsof means to desire. What's Hashem saying? Hashem says, you're interested in entertainment. You're interested in all kinds of interesting things. You get the season tickets to any stadium for all kinds of interesting things. Do you get the season tickets to the Siyam HaShas? Are you interested in, are you getting with the program? Do you care? Where do you care? What do you care about? Where's your passion? That's what he's asking. Alan Payton, the author of Cry of the Beloved Country, once said that when I get to heaven, God will ask me, where are my scars? And when I say I have none, he'll ask me, was there nothing worth fighting for? Was there nothing worth fighting for? Hashem is always saying over here, well, you know what I want is your kesef. I want your kesifa, your desire, your passion for something. don't live life just being pushed by the currents of life. Where do Israel care about? What do they care? Is spirituality the forefront of what they care about? That's the question Hashem is asking over here. Then in this section, he says, he throws the remaining silver into the warehouse. What's that referring to? Telling Zechariah to do that. The Mitzvot points out that this refers to the 30 tzaddikim, that even though the nation themselves aren't worthy of salvation, Hashem says, there's always going to be 30 tzaddikim I keep in my warehouse, 30 righteous people who are going to be worthwhile to sustain the entire world on their behalf. That's what seems to be going on. Yeah, so put into the storehouse before the destruction is the memory of these. I know Kabbalistically we've heard about 36 tzaddikim, 30 vav, lamed vav, hidden tzaddikim. It seems that the marshal over here is 30. There are 30 basic people who need to sustain the world at one point, and they're kept in the storehouse of Hashem, so to speak, their actions. What about the breaking of the second stick? What does that mean? What's going on with that? So the Mitzvah says, I mean to say, and it's something so worthwhile thinking about, Hashem's going to even break the hashkacha protest of punishment. What that means to say is it worse to be under Hashem's hashkacha protest of punishment or to not be under Hashem's hand at all? And the answer is much better to be under Hashem's hashkacha protest of punishment, because Hashem's still involved and cares directly, than to have both the staffs broken and then not to be anything, just to be mikra. So Hashem says, it's going to get so bad that I'm going to have to break both the staffs. That's a terrifying thought. Finally, the parak concludes the last three psukim, in which he tells Zechariah to go find a crooked shepherd's staff. So now we've lost Noam, we've lost Chovlim. So now he asks him to find a crooked shepherd's staff to lead the sheep, and it's going to be one which hurts the sheep. It's going to be a shepherd who is a shepherd evil. This is not a good person who's not going to care about the people. He's not going to heal the weak or feed the needy. He'll be weak and he'll invite in destruction. He'll leave the flocks. He'll have a sword in his hand, but he's just going to let in the bad people. Who's this referring to? So the Mepharshim point out almost unanimously that this refers to Herod. Herod was actually a servant of the Chashmonaim, and as the Gemara tells us about Basar Daf Gimel Amud Beis, he was actually jealous. He wanted to marry into the Chashmonaim dynasty, and he had his eyes set on one of the Chashmonaim young ladies. And when this happened, he staged a rebellion, killed all the Chashmonaim, every single one of them but her. She went up to her rooftop, and just before she jumped, she said, "Anybody who tells you that they're from the Chashmonaim dynasty is a servant, because I'm the last one," and she jumped to her death. That was the end of the Chashmonaim dynasty, killed by Herod. Herod then went on to kill the Sanhedrin. He was a terrible, terrible person. He ultimately did teshuvah and he revamped the Beis HaMikdash in a beautiful way, but basically killed out all the Chashmonaim sovereignty, and he killed out the Sanhedrin to a large degree, except for Baba Ben Butta. I mean, a terrible, terrible time. And ultimately, he made allegiances with Rome, and Rome started encroaching, ultimately leading to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Very complicated times. Very, very complicated times. And this is the crooked shepherd. This is the staff which does not really look after the sheep. Let's appreciate something over here. You know, when we hear these things about the Chashmonaim, we hear bad things go on. You know, sometimes to ourselves, we think to ourselves, oh yeah, you know, maybe it wasn't perfect, but you've got to really read a little bit of Josephus to appreciate this. If you read Antiquities of the Jews, book 8, chapter 11, you start reading about what happens after the Jews have sovereignty of the land of Israel. We start reading about Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. You know, Hyrcanus was the king. When he died, his eldest son, Aristobulus, took position. But because his mother was supposed to actually have been the queen that was supposed to be the ruler, he put her in jail and put his other two brothers in jail because she there was a dispute of the government. Then it goes on to describe that even when Aristobulus himself fell sick, he had another brother who he trusted, and he told him to come to him and visit him, and Antigonus, but Antigonus was betrayed by his mother, and she told him to go in arms, which was the secret code for the brothers, therefore for the gods to kill him, and ultimately he was killed, even though he was the trusted brother. One thing after the next, to the point that the Gemara Bakama tells us that there was actually a fight between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, to the degree that there was a siege in Jerusalem between one faction and the other faction of the Chashmonaim, and the faction on the outside was sending in the korbanos that they could use, the korban tamid in the Beis HaMikdash, and one day they sent up a pig on the rope. And the Gemara describes that metaphorically when its hooves, you know, touched the wall Yerushalayim, it created an earthquake that the world shook, that there could be such, that religion could be the center of such a terrible, disgusting dispute. When we talk about the end of the Chashmonaim, it was a very complex, it was a very dark time. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what, it's going to come to a point where I myself am going to turn to these people and I'm going to say, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm going to even break the second rod of Chovlim. That's what we're talking about over here. This is such a unique prophecy because this prophecy is one which looks forward to the end of the second Beis Hamikdash and tells them that there's a very dark road ahead of them if they so choose. And unfortunately, looking back, the Mephoshim have no shortage of events which they can attribute to this ultimate prophecy. It's a much more darker aspect of Zechariah, but a very necessary one to learn. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.